Hi there, and welcome to the Homestead Education Podcast. Do you have a homestead, farm, or just dream of a rural life? This is a show to help you and your kids grow your own food and grow as a person. I'm your host, Cody Hanner. I'm a homesteader, homeschool mama six, and small town enthusiast. I was raised by an old school rancher and blessed by the grace of God to have been exposed to so much of what rural life has to offer. Join me every week to talk about homesteading, homeschooling, and growth with a homestead education. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Homestead Education Podcast. Today, I have Jenny Urich from Thousand Hours Outside. We've had the opportunity to meet a couple of times, and I had a chance to be on her podcast recently, which was wonderful. And so I'm excited to be able to share her story and her mission with you guys. So welcome, Jenny.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. And it's always extra fun when you've met the person in person. Like, we've made that connection, and it's really cool. You know, it comes through the internet, and you already know each other. And so then if you're at the same event or, you know, the same conference, something like that, you know, what a special thing to already, you know, already have talked. And so it's been awesome.
It is. I love being able to like make those connections, especially when we make them in advance. And then we do a podcast later and we're like, yay, hi.
Yeah. Good to see you again.
Right. And oh my goodness, how many people have we met this year on the road?
Oh, so many. That's one of the coolest things about the conferences. They're a lot of work and they take a lot of time to prepare, a lot of time to set up. And I would say that the best part of them are the relationships that you make. And I think sometimes you can make those relationships in such quick snippets of time. I don't know really how or why that works, but you know, some people have like, I've gone to one, you know, we go to a conference and we went to an escape room one night. And then you're like, well, you're friends with those people forever. Right. So it's a really cool thing.
There's one, I made a contact with a gal in Missouri. It's Brandy Von Holt. And I had her on my podcast recently and we just clicked like right off the bat. And we've done like three other conferences together now. And two weeks ago I was in Missouri and I got to go out and tour her ranch and my daughter got to go horseback riding. And I mean, it was just so fun.
That is so, so cool, Cody. What a neat thing. Well, it's really cool too, because it starts to enhance the lives of our kids too. Depending on the situation, they get different opportunities. So that's really awesome.
Yeah. Oh, my kids have friends all over the country now that they still text and stay in contact with. So that's awesome. So, you know, I came across your podcast and, you know, I was able to come on your show, which was such an amazing experience because you brought things out in me that it was a very vulnerable episode that I hadn't shared a lot of that information before, not for any other reason than I just didn't think anyone wanted to or was ready to hear it yet. But I'm really excited to have you on today because you have created this movement and this mission that you have like enlightened so many people and have learned so much. And I'm just excited, ready to pick your brain.
Aw, I'm really honored to be here.
So for anyone who doesn't know about 1,000 Hours Outside, which I know a lot of my followers already do, do you want to tell us a little bit about do we call it a movement?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, totally. It's a movement, but really it stemmed out of my own experience, Cody. I think that when my kids were little, you know, I was really struggling with the day-to-day overwhelm of young kids. And so I found something that really changed my own life. And so that's what it's always been for me, is sort of sharing that. And this strategy that kind of has worked really for all seasons of parenting, from babies and now we have teenagers. So when our kids were little, I just didn't really know what to do with them and to pass the time. And I think, you know, we lived in the city, we lived in a neighborhood. It's like, we didn't live out on a farm. And I don't know, there wasn't really as much thought of like, maybe there was, and I just didn't know about it, but like kids running free or kids roaming or kids just playing like they used to. I think things had sort of changed and everyone was doing these different programs. Like they were like, well, you sign up for this and you sign up for that. And I just felt like those things were so exhausting. Like there was a lot of output.
Tell me about it.
You know, for 45 minutes, you know, you're going to go to the library and you're going to try and get your little kid, you're wrangling them all the time. And, you know, you're having to carry this and carry that and get them through the parking lot and the car seats and the food and the snacks and, you know, the diapers and this one needs to nurse. I mean, it was just a lot. And I felt like
the well-behaved ones are squirmy.
Yeah, because they don't really want to be doing those different things. And they're so short. So I remember like it would be 11 in the morning and I would already be just like completely toast, you know, because you're not sleeping through the night too. You're already just so exhausted and overwhelmed. And so I spent a lot of early childhood that way. And I don't know, trying to like make it through, but not really loving it. And my whole life changed one day when we went outside for a long period of time. And the reason that we did was because a friend of mine who was at MOPS, that was another program that we did, but a friend of mine, she said, she came to MOPS one day and she said it just like this. She said, Charlotte Mason says that kids should be outside for 4 to 6 hours whenever the weather is tolerable. I was like, that sounds weird. I don't know. I don't know who Charlotte Mason is, and I've never heard of that. And when you look around at culture, it's like nobody's doing anything for 4 to 6 hours. No one. They're just everything is, you know, this little swim class and that music thing, and we're gonna go to the park for a like a concert, like a kids concert, but it's only 32 minutes or whatever. It's like all that kind of stuff. So I just remember thinking like to go outside for 4 hours would be awful. Because I thought, well, the kids are going to be bored, and what are they going to do? And their toys aren't there, and how are we going to keep them occupied? But this friend of mine really wanted to try it, and I was in that season of life. I mean, actually, I think all of mothering—you're trying to have relationships. So she just said, "Can we try it?" And so I said, "Okay," reluctantly, and I thought it's going to be awful. But what ended up happening was, this is over a decade ago. We went to this park in Michigan. It's in the fall, so it's real beautiful here in Michigan. And we went, we met at 9 in the morning, bring a picnic lunch, she said, and a picnic blanket. That's all. And we're going to stay till 1 in the afternoon. And I just thought, well, no way is this going to go well. But it did. And what ended up happening was, like, we each had three kids. The youngest were babies, so they like slept and nursed and sat on the blanket. I don't know. And the older kids played. And I just really, it sounds so silly, Cody. Like, I had no idea that kids could play for that long. No idea. There was no playground even. It was just like a grassy area, a little river that ran through, a little creek, like a shallow, a creek. You know, there's ducks and rocks. Anyway, these four little toddler preschoolers, they just ran around for 4 hours. They'd come back and get food, they'd go back and play. And it was really, I always say it was the first good day I had as a mom. I hadn't had a good day yet. And I've been a mom for like 3 years, and I hadn't had a good day. And that was the first good day I had as a mom because I finally had like a little bit of respite and I could have a conversation with a friend. The kids were happy and they all fell asleep on the way home. So, I mean, it was like this, whoa, hallelujah thing. But you know what? What ended up happening was we really changed how we did early childhood. And immediately, I was like, well, this is the way that I need to live because at least I can be a little bit more present and I'm not quite so frantic. So we changed to live this way. And there was really only a couple other families, Cody, that were interested in like getting together for longer periods of time. So maybe there's like four or five families and some would come and go. And sometimes people would show up and we would try a couple times a week to get together for these longer periods of time instead of doing all those short programs. And within a very short period of time, like everyone was thriving. No one's getting sick. Everyone's eating better. Everyone's sleeping better. Everyone's happier. You know, everyone's ch challenging their bodies. Look at me, mom. Try this, try that. And I was so much happier. So it's just something that changed the whole course of our family. And so we lived that way for 2 years, where we're spending this time with this little nature group that we had, you know, unofficial nature group, and we get together. And in 2 years, and we're in Metro Detroit area, so it's a lot of people, we did not run into one other child. There's grandparents out on the trail, you know, that's it. There's no other kids out playing. So I just thought, back then, this is back in 2013, so it's been a decade when I started to write about it because it was so life-changing for me as a parent. And I had begun to learn that when we go outside and simply go outside, this isn't like you have to plan duck duck goose or you have to make a scavenger hunt. When we just go outside and kids play and we let them play, you know, in a safe environment, right? Like they're not close to the road or whatever, but in a safe environment, that they grow in every facet of their development. It helps even their cognition, but certainly their emotional state. It helps their social skills tremendously. It helps their physical bodies, obviously, but in ways that we don't even really realize, like their eyesight, down to their eyesight. And then also, for families that are interested, it helps their kids spiritually. So that's sort of where it came from. It came as an outgrowth of my own struggles as a mom. I went with 1,000 hours outside because I had ended up adding up how much time we were spending outside because there was this statistic floating around that kids were outside only for 4 to 7 minutes, but they were on screens for 4 to 7 hours. So that was in a day, 4 to 7 minutes of outdoor
That is
free play a day,
crazy.
4 to 7 hours on screen. So I was more out of curiosity. And then I added up, like with this little nature group, we were outside for about 18 to 20 hours a week, more in the summer, less in the winter where we're in Michigan, but, you know, added up to 1200 hours a year. And I just thought that equaled the amount of time that kids were on screens on average in America, 1200 hours a year. Whatever, we're not anti-screen, but I just thought, if all of
Yeah,
this
neither
time,
are we. They're good tools when they're used for what they're supposed to be used for.
And so, but I just thought, like, if all of that time, all of that 1200 hours that we spent outside building relationships, making memories, connecting as a family, the kids learning and growing and digging and working on their fine motor skills, all these things, like if all of that had gone to screens, our life would be so much less fulfilling. So I thought, I'm going to write about it. I'm going to call it 1,000 hours outside. It's a little catchier than 1,200 hours outside. But the premise is about balance. And it's for kids and adults. But the premise is about having balance between real life and virtual life and how fulfilling that can make your day-to-day just by having a goal.
No, yeah, I absolutely, it has been such, even just listening to what you have to say, you know, we've chatted before where, you know, we're farmers, our kids are outside all the time. And in fact, they actually tried to negotiate with me when I was like, hey, have you, you know, let me tell you about 1,000 hours outside. Cause you know, they always want to know who I'm interviewing with and stuff. They get excited as well. And I was explaining to them what 1,000 hours outside was. And so they, you know, did the math and what does it work out, like 3.3 hours a day or something. And they're like, oh, we're covered. Like just our chores cover that. And I was like, no, it's supposed to be 1,000 hours of undirected time outside.
Sure. Although you count whatever. I mean, people are all, they're up in arms about what they count. But, you know, it's interesting that you say that, Cody, because there is a woman, and I refer to her often. Her name's Angela Hanscom. She wrote a book called Balanced and Barefoot. It's really a phenomenal read for families.
I have that sitting on my shelf.
It's so good. It's one of the best books, really, I've ever read. And she's a pediatric occupational therapist by trade. So she was seeing, like, the front line of decline in skills of children over the years. Like she said, the wait list for occupational therapy services is a year. And, you know, kids are really struggling with stamina, with sensory issues, all these different things. And so she really advocates for outdoor play. But one of the things that she says is about 3 hours a day is the minimum for kids to get outside. And she says, and this is what's really interesting, because Cody, I think like most people would say, oh, 3 hours, that's way too much. I don't have 3 hours. We're too busy. I this scheduled and where am I supposed to fit that in? But she says, if you ask someone who grew up, I guess maybe in the 80s or earlier, maybe the early 90s, that they would say they did get 3 hours plus a day just in the way that their life was structured. Like maybe they walked to school. We had several recesses, and then you would come home and you'd play in the neighborhood for a little bit until dinner. Or
I mean, I remember even walking home with my friends from school. Like I couldn't walk home to my house, but when I went to my grandma's, I had a bunch of friends in her neighborhood, and we'd like purposely cut down like back through the railroad tracks and over the river, and nobody knew where we were. There was no structure to what we were doing, and nobody expected us home for like an hour and a half or 2 hours after school. And that's where we had all of our memories and where we even had social skills, because all the kids in our little tiny town of like 1700 all walked the same way. And that was our entire social network.
Yeah, so much is going on in those conversations. And I've actually been talking about this quite a lot, but I talked recently to this 20-year-old named Sean Killingsworth, and he started this thing called the Reconnect Movement, where he is helping colleges, and it's pretty grassroots at this point, but like have these clubs where when you come together, no one has a phone. And he said it's really for a couple main reasons. One is social skills. Like, you know, you can't just turn to your phone. He said, like, no one's talking to each other anymore. And the second thing he said is that, you know, it's so that things can't be recorded indefinitely. That, you know, when we were kids, like you say something stupid or you do something, whatever, you make a funny move, or like, it just passes. Like you have these moments of authentic living, but now anything can be recorded. And so he said it really is affecting the way that kids interact with each other. He calls it a social wasteland. It's really sad. You know, so it's interesting to look back on what we had and think, like our kids, a lot of them are not getting that at all.
You know, I see that so much across the board, and even in the rural communities that we live in, you know, my kids have friends that I see these kids just on their phones and stuff all the time. And not that my kids don't have phones. I mean, I have 2 14-year-olds, almost 15. They need phones. They need to be able to communicate properly with me and with their friends, and to be able to have my calendar auto-populate to their calendar. And I mean, we have busy, crazy lives, but I do see that difference with, you know, like my kids that even at this point, my teenagers, they reflect on what you have taught and they go, hey, the little boys have been inside for like 2 3 days in a row, like, because the weather's been bad. I think we need to get them outside for several hours today. And so they're outside right now, and the little boys wanted to go pick the garden. That was their choice of what they wanted to do. So my daughter's out there monitoring them picking the garden right now while we're doing this interview. So,
Yeah, they
and
have
so
an
I love.
innate knowledge. I think that's one of the biggest things that comes up is that, you know, of course, when you give a child a screen, it's meant to draw them in and it's designed by the most brilliant of the brilliant. And it's meant to, I don't know, I guess I would say like fulfill a lot of our basic human needs. Like it's
Like
meant to
just that
fulfill our need for
serotonin boost.
novelty and yeah, all of that. But our kids, if they're given the time and space, they're gonna go after what helps them grow and what helps them thrive. It's really a beautiful thing about children. And so outside, they're constantly challenging themselves and they're putting themselves in situations that give them all of this sensory input, and that's helping them to grow to become the person that they're meant to be. And I think so much of that is missing in this day and time. And I guess we wouldn't even really relate. It's such an interesting thing to think, like we don't relate to the childhoods that these kids are having. But I think a lot of kids are very grieved by it, especially when they hit adulthood.
Yeah. I mean, they know how to like use technology in a work setting, probably more than, you know, we did. And I've had to learn, but I even kind of laugh, like I'm so much more tech savvy than my kids. But just because of the nature of my business. But when I'm interacting with them, we're not, you know, using Google Drive and those types of things. We're having real life conversations, but I'm actually struggling right now. My 15-year-old has a little, my or 14-year-old son, he has a little bit of electronic addiction because he doesn't know how to balance that. He is high functioning autistic too, so he struggles. And so I've been reading a lot of books with that lately and having him do he's doing like, I couldn't find a workbook on electronic addiction that fit him because he doesn't do video games or social media. It's all YouTube. So I'm like, oh, that doesn't really like, I don't know how to fit that in. So we've been doing some executive functioning workbooks just to help him make some good positive choices. So, you know, we're even struggling with that in our own house as a family that is just inherently outside.
Right. I think that every family is struggling with it. I would imagine, unless maybe you're completely screen free, which is intriguing. In some ways, I wish if I went back in time, maybe we wouldn't have a TV or something like that. But if you have screens in your home, kids are going to ask to use them. And I think even in our home, kids always have like a reason. So we try and bound it in. Like this is the time for it and this is not the time for it. But they'll be like, well, I haven't talked to so and so in a while, and now this is the time when he's available. So they always have their things that come up. But I think what we're looking at is twofold. One is really making sure that kids know what analog life is like. And with 1200 hours a year on a screen, and if a kid maybe has homework and sports and extracurriculars, it's possible that they're almost never getting time like what you had, walking home, walking through the creek, just sitting around, almost never having that. And so they need to know. They need to know that downtime can be fun and a lot of things come out of that. And then number two, I think our kids need tools. And in 1970, no one would have ever tracked how much time they spent outside because it didn't matter, and everyone was doing that, and there was less societal pull to be on screens and that type of thing. So it's just an interesting thing. I think our kids and ourselves, like, I need a tool. I could sit here all day and do podcasts or read or make articles for whatever. I mean, there's always more that you could do. And so I
Oh,
think that
yeah.
we have to have a little bit of tools in our life in order for us to be able to strive for balance. And I think what you brought up, Cody, was super interesting because you said, well, it's not social media, it's not video games, it's YouTube. And I think that's another tricky part is that when we were kids, it was just pretty much TV. And then video games came, but they were like not as immersive for a very long time. So the things that
you could only play Mario Brothers for so long.
right. Or Duck Hunt. I mean, you know, it's Zelda. They weren't as immersive. And so
I mean, it literally had to be like a sick day from school or something where I even thought about it.
Right. Totally. So we are actually up against so much more. Like, goodness, you start rattling it off. It's like social. There's TikTok and there's Snapchat. And there, I mean, there's so many things. And then there's just like the news and YouTube. I mean, you have endless scrolling content always at your fingertips, Netflix, Amazon Prime. So it's a lot to juggle. And I would imagine that almost any family that has a screen in their home is trying to figure out how to manage it.
Yeah. And I mean, our 18-year-old last year, he got in some trouble. And so we took away his cell phone and we're like, you're allowed to call your girlfriend on the house phone. We still have a house phone. So we live in the middle of nowhere. So when we lose power, we still have to have a house phone. And we're like, you can still call your girlfriend so that she doesn't think that you like hate her or something. So we don't need her going through like a spiral when they're used to these, you know, constant connection.
Right.
But he wasn't allowed to do anything except for like just hang out in the house, around the house or the property, or talk to his girlfriend on the phone. And she went to school. He, you know, homeschooled. So he only got to talk to her in the evenings. And he's like, this is so weird. Like, I go outside and I cut firewood and I come inside and I do push-ups. And then I talk to my girlfriend on this long corded phone, like out in the middle of the living room where everybody's listening. He's like, I feel like I'm in prison.
Like, welcome to 1987.
Because right? That is how I grew up.
Well, it's an interesting thing though, Cody. Like, there's this concept out there called promise versus peril. So a couple of different people have written about it. I don't even know where it originates from, but Andy Crouch wrote about it. And he's got a book called The Tech Wise Family. And then his newest one actually has I can't remember what the name is. It's called, I don't know what it's called. It's his newest one. And then Nicholas Carderis wrote about it in his book called Digital Madness. But it's this concept of like, you know, technology comes with all this promise, like all these bells and whistles and everyone's excited, but there's always, almost always a downside to it. And one of the things that they talk about is just like even like a road that once you make a road, like you can't really walk on it anymore and the horses can't go on it. And like, it's great. Now you can go fast on your automobiles, but it's cut something out. And so I just even think the thing with the phones, like that was actually a really special part about phones growing up is that it was more of a family affair. You knew who was calling, right? You would pick it up as the mom, you know, and you'd get 2 or 3 minutes or 30 seconds or whatever to talk to your kids' friends. And they'd have to say, you know, hi, Mrs. Hanner, you know, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And, you know,
John, can I talk to Wyatt, you know, and
Yes. And so we've lost that. We've lost that little bit of family connection. And so like when he says, and there's a little bit of accountability there, right? Like when you're on that corded phone and everyone can hear what you're saying, maybe you're going to say some different things.
Yeah. Or even like, I mean, I felt like I failed my kids at one moment because the house phone rang the other day and I said, hey, can you grab that? And one of them ran over and just picked up the phone and put it to their ear and waited. Like, say hello. And they're like,
aww.
Hello? Like, what happens when I say hello into this thing, you know?
Wow.
And so, and that was my couple of my older ones.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, sure, because normally you know who it is because you can see it on your phone. I mean, I just even think this is such a silly example, but like, you know, I remember when caller ID came out. And so there was a long period of time. You don't know who's calling.
Yeah.
And that's kind of exciting. Mm-hmm. We've lost that, right? Isn't it kind of exciting? Like, it might be my friend. Someone might be inviting me over, you know, or whatever. Maybe it's a telemarketer. Mm-hmm. You don't know. And so that element of surprise. Well, yeah. Is it great to know who's calling so we can like hit decline or accept? Mm-hmm. Sure. You know, we have a lot more control, but also we've lost something. You lose something along the way. So I think it's interesting to look at technology from that perspective.
I actually, when I noticed that, it was just over a year ago, the first time that happened. And so when I wrote my curriculum, I actually put in there, like, if, you know, you like the project for the day is to find out what the law is for selling eggs in your county. And make the kids call the county health department and find out.
Like, and
Yeah.
I'm like, don't let your kids just Google it. Like, make them call
Right.
and find out. And now that's like the rule in our house is anything major like that that the kids can handle on their own at almost 15, they're making those phone calls, whether it's ordering a pizza or my daughter wanted to take a bunch of clothes to consignment the other day, but they only take consignment certain days. I said, well, you better call and find out what days so that I can plan that.
Sure.
And she's like, well, how do I do that? And I was like, oh, figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, these are skills that used to be innate. I mean, innate's the wrong word, but you grow up with it, so you learn it, and
Well, you saw
things
your
have
parents
really
doing it,
changed.
and we don't do it anymore.
Yeah, so that's another reason. Like, you don't have a house phone, no one really sees the different phone etiquette. So yeah, it's a lot to think about. And I think, obviously not everything is good, not everything is bad, but one of the things that we've lost is time for play. And screens have taken up that time, so has schoolwork, so have extracurricular activities. And I think we have to be really intentional about making sure that our kids get that, because it's so important for their long-term development. Like, it's good for today too. Like, it makes today better, but also for their long-term development and being able to adjust into the adult world. Like, I talked to this woman. Her name is Dr. Jean Twenge, and she's written a lot of books, like, about the changes in the generations. They're pretty interesting. Her latest one is called Generations, but the one I really, really liked was called iGen, which stands for Internet Generation. And she says, like, she's getting students that come to her college classes now, like, in America, like, she's in California, where they can't even, she says, they can't even make simple decisions without calling their parents. Or texting. They don't even call their parents, they text. That's what she said. They can't make simple decisions without texting their parents. So, I mean, it really actually does matter that their kids get opportunities to do, like what you said, to talk to people, to make a phone call, to figure things out, to wrestle with things. Otherwise, they're really at a disadvantage when they hit adulthood.
They really are. And sorry, I had this like really great thing that I was going to say, and just whoosh, right out the
It happens. Did it have to do with the generations? Did it have to do with a book that you read? Did it have to do, what were we talking about? We're talking about the
terms of
phones.
phones.
I'm trying to help jog your memory. I'm not doing a good
Yeah.
job. Apparently I'm
Yeah,
not.
it's all right.
Apparently I'm not.
I made a note for my,
About playing?
VHS.
Would anything about playing, like,
Oh, it was school.
okay.
So that you made a really good point with school taking away from kids being able to spend time outside. And I know that your movement doesn't necessarily say that kids should be homeschooled, but it leads to something in the standard brick and mortar system that these kids aren't outside enough.
Oh
And
no. Oh, and they're just cutting recess left and right. They're changing the playgrounds to the deprivation of the child. I think that potentially it comes from, I mean, I would guess it comes from the right intention. Like, we're really trying to help our kids. Their scores are failing. They're struggling this and the other thing. So we're
But
trying to, like,
why are their
double
scores
down.
failing?
Yeah, it's like we're going the wrong way. We're doubling down on what doesn't work. And so, yeah, recess has definitely been cut, I think, in middle school. Like, there's no recess. I mean, these kids. I actually that Angela Hanscom that wrote Balanced and Barefoot, she just said that kids are sitting, I think she said it was 7 or 9 hours a day.
Well, then that doesn't even like that not only affects their like cognitive and their attention and all that stuff, but I mean their weight and their physical and stuff,
Sure.
and
Yeah, I mean, we could talk about
I'm a
that. Like, they're
chunky girl, I
physical.
can say that,
Yeah. Well, it's physical. Oh, she says 9 hours. That's what it was. She said that on average, kids are sitting 9 hours a day. So, beyond your weight or that type of thing, she talks a lot about, and other people do too, that it goes way beyond that for your physical, body. So one of the things is,
Yeah,
like, your
your
lymphatic
posture
system,
and
your posture, sure, your ligaments. So, like, they have to be able to stretch. And when you go outside, the terrain is so varied. So, you're using your fast twitch muscle, they're called. Like, you have to adjust in your, so you don't fall. Or, like, there was an example of like doing pond hockey versus being inside on an inside ice rink. Like it's all flat and it's all smoothed out. They take out that Zamboni thing and it's all like nice and smooth for you. But if you go play pond hockey, there's like little ripples and there's bubbles and it's not smooth. And so you can just see the difference for your physical well-being that there's all these varied terrain. So there's that, like your ligaments and your tendons and your joints and your posture, your lymphatic system is a system that moves the lymph fluid throughout your body. And that's what like gets rid of a lot of the germs. It's like the germ fighting system. Well, it's not like your cardiovascular system that goes no matter what. Your lymphatic system has to like get moved. And the way that it starts pumping is through vigorous physical movement. Mm-hmm. So, you know, talk about like not getting sick as much. It's helping that. And like kids that play in the farm or play in the dirt, they have less asthma, they have less allergies, they have less eczema. So a lot of times those types of things are helped. And then eyesight, even your eyesight, like kids' eyes are still forming between the ages of 5 and 9. They need to be able to see near and far. I actually read about this ring around the eye muscle. It's called the ciliary ring. And it's always flexed. Like your bicep, the ring around your eye is always flexed whenever you're inside and even when you're sleeping. So it doesn't ever relax. The only time it relaxes is when you go outside and you have this long field of vision. So kids that are doing too much near work, too much inside, they're developing nearsightedness. So myopia is on the rise. So there is a whole lot that's going on with our physical bodies beyond just the movement portion of it. And the exercise, right? There is a lot going on besides that. Like you said, the posture, stamina. Stamina is one of those things, just the amount of energy that we have. So it's doing a whole lot for our kids to get them outside. And they're losing a lot by sitting for 9+ hours a day.
Yeah. I mean, like I, as a homeschool mom, I have the ability to be like, let's go sit outside and do school. Sometimes I like to go work outside. Even if I'm still sitting, it's fresh air, it's sunshine. Yeah. It's if I'm reading to the younger boys, they can be running around while I'm reading. You know, my daughter, sometimes she'll like lay on the trampoline while she's reading or something. And it's just, they're doing different things with their bodies, you know?
And there's that full spectrum sunlight out there. There's the sounds of nature, which are, it's all three-dimensional. I think that's another thing too, is they say like our eyes are not meant to have all this two-dimensional work, like two dimensions on the phone and two dimensions on the screen. So much schoolwork is on screen, all these different things. Like we're meant to see in 3D. And so, yeah. I mean, if you just took the physical parts, I mean, like that's enough to say kids should go outside, but it does weigh more than that.
Like my husband actually sent me this, like, I don't know if it, I guess you call it a meme, but it was like an informational meme the other day that they're actually changing the way they type to a way called bionic writing because it's such shallow typing, like shallow reading all the time that they'll highlight like the core word of each, the core part of each word. Like if it's reading, the read part will be in bold.
Wow.
And I was like, I mean, I think it's awesome that they're doing something like that because when we are reading when you started talking about the three-dimensional versus two-dimensional, I was like, that really like popped for me because I'm like, kids are reading on screens all the time. And I know that like when I read on my Kindle versus when I'm reading a book, it has a different effect on my eyes. Because it's like moving, like the whole time it's moving. Wow. It's very slight movement, but it's moving, you know? And so when he showed me that, I handed it to my daughter who's dyslexic and she reads pretty well, but she read it and she was like, wow. Like, she's like, I was able to read that all straight through. And I was like, well, that's something that they're seeing that there's actually an issue there that needs to be fixed, but that's still, I'd much rather them have a paper book sitting in the yard still, but
Well, it is interesting though. I mean, I preparing for podcasts, like sometimes people will try and send me like the digital copy of their book. And I'm like, no, I need the actual one. Cause otherwise it really bothers my eyes. I don't have to stare at the screen for hours and hours while I try and read your book online. So it definitely does something. And I think eyesight is one of those things that is really enhanced by the full spectrum of light, even like even the colors of the light. Like the colors of the light are meant to guide our bodies. So like you wake up in the morning, dawn, you know, in the dawn, it wakes your body up. There's different, like spectrums are brighter at different parts of the day. And you know, when you get to the night, it's like it starts to be blues and purples, and it's meant to wind your body down. That's what those colors are meant to do. But inside, we do not have that, especially the fluorescent lights. Like the spectrums are all over the place. They're pinging. There's like this one's really long. I don't know exactly all the different numbers and which color or
Right.
whatever, but it's not that wave. It's not like that beautiful wave of light that you get when you're outside. So even that, like when you go out in the morning, this is another physical thing. When you go out in the morning, it's got to be in the morning. The light, that spectrum of light goes through your eyes, it hits your brain, and your body releases serotonin. So it helps you feel good. It helps to reset your body systems. I think there's 100 body systems that are dependent on the day and night cycle. And you have to get outside. It's not bright enough indoors. Even on a cloudy day, it's way brighter than it would be indoors. So you get outside, that light hits your eyes, it goes to your pineal gland, I think it's called, and it helps to reset all these body systems. And then at night, the serotonin, which makes you feel good in the morning, turns into melatonin, which makes you sleepy at night. So this is like the way that we're supposed to live.
I think the first article ever written on the dangers of technology on our systems was written in something like 1880, and it was in regards to the light bulb.
Wow. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
So it was that they were concerned that the light bulb was causing our systems to not function right anymore. And then they started talking about, even the invention of the watch made it where everybody was stressed about time. The watch was supposed to make things easier where you could show up to things on time, but the stress of like it was a manufactured anxiety.
Yeah. Well, both
And
of those
they,
things pull us from nature, don't they? Isn't that interesting, Cody? It's like, well, the light bulb pulls us away from that natural cycle of the day and night, and so does the watch.
And so they just said that, all the technologies that we are creating are cr actually creating stress rather than making our lives easier. And, that article was brought up in a book I was reading, The Self-Reliant Child, I believe is what the book that I was reading. I really liked that one. And I was just like, wow, because then you look at all the other technologies that we have now, and that most of them don't haven't actually made our lives easier. They've
The Andy Crouch,
manufactured.
yes. Yeah. The Andy Crouch says the robots have arrived. Are we more fulfilled? Because his whole premise is like we're already kind of here. We have all these robotic things. We've got our Roomba. We've got, then we've got all these new technologies that people didn't have 60, 70 years ago. We got our dishwashers and our washing machines. And he's like, are we more fulfilled? I don't think so.
You know what? Honestly, a lot of these types of things, like you brought up the Roomba. Do you know how many times I have to save that thing from going down the stairs? It's just so much easier to once a day bust out my vacuum and vacuum the living room, you
Well, and
know?
isn't that interesting too? It's like that is a full body movement. Like you have to bend over to plug it in, and then you have to wind the cord, and like you have to move it, and there's a little bit of push and pull on your body, and you immediately see the results. Like the floor looks nice. So that's that promise versus peril. It's like, okay, great, now I don't have to vacuum. But then you're like, oh, well, maybe vacuuming was kind of nice.
And I think with like the homestead movement that kind of even parallels a lot of what you're teaching is we just realized that our parents' generation was sold convenience. And it
Absolutely.
has drastically affected our generation and the coming generations in a lot of ways really negatively. And I think that's just kind of what we're trying to do is kind of take a step back and hold on to the things that, we kind of have to at this point and bring back the things that were, were the when they sold their soul for convenience, you know?
Like that would have started maybe even in the kitchen. I would imagine canned foods, and we can make this for you, and now you don't have to slave away. But then you're like, oh, but it's kind of fun to be in the kitchen. It's kind of fun to cook things. It makes you feel good. It's fun to chop vegetables and make breads and knead dough and smell the different smells and that type of thing. So, yeah, what an interesting thing. I think it was sold in a lot of forms.
I absolutely believe it was. And I mean, and look at our health and our mental health and our everything that, like you said, like I said, we sold our souls for it.
Yeah, it's so true. And our kids are suffering. You can really see it. There's a really good book called The Comfort Crisis by Michael Easter, and he talks about that. That comfort is not the end all be all. And I think that's the message that's permeated for a very long time, is that we're striving to have everything more comfortable. But when we're in a spot where we're discomfortable, uncomfortable, that's a word, uncomfortable, then the comforts feel better too. So you have to have that dichotomy. You have to have the cold and the warm fire, and you have to have, you know, the climb up the mountain to see the
Jill
views, and
Winger
you do
talks
all of
about
that.
that a lot. Yeah, Jill Winger talks about, like, you put all that effort into cutting your firewood for the year that you actually enjoy that warmth more once you've had to work for it. So you, I mean, you've gotten to talk to so many amazing people in your research and in your interviews and stuff. Was there ever like something that came about that was like, oh my gosh, this solidifies everything that I've been trying to do, or like just was like super eye-opening for you?
Well, there's definitely been certain books that have been, I would say, the most life-changing for me. I think, like I said, from the very beginning, from day one, we go outside, our kids are thriving right from day one. I mean, this is a change that happened immediately, and I noticed it, but I didn't know anything about it. And in fact, I really just started to go outside more so for my own mental health and well-being, because I just thought, like, well, if I can be a more present mom and not be so frantic and frazzled, then that's going to help our family. But I noticed very quickly that our kids were thriving. And so there was a couple books I read that really solidified it for me over the years. So Balanced and Barefoot is definitely one. I would say that's my top favorite, by Angela Hanscom, because she goes through all of those different parts of childhood that are enhanced simply by letting your kids play. So this is like a really hopeful book. And she's a pediatric occupational therapist. There's another one named Carla Hannaford, who's also a pediatric occupational therapist, who wrote a book called Smart Moves. And so it's a similar vein. Like, the subtitle is Why Learning Is Not All in Your Head. And it's sort of like this marriage of movement and learning, because I think so often when we think of learning, we think of sitting. And maybe that's why we have our kids sitting for 9 hours a day. It's because that's what we're prioritizing. But she makes the case that when we move in complex ways, that's what's enhancing the neural wiring in our brain. So if you take your kids outside and they try and climb the fence, or they try and climb the tree, or they roll down the hill, or they do all these really complex movements, cartwheels and the things on the playgrounds, all of that, that is actually helping them academically. It's helping their cognition. And those neural wiring, you know, the myelin and the things that's coding that, those are lasting for a long time. It's helping all the way really into old age. Like she says, even if you dance, like if you're an elderly person and you dance, you're going to have a much less, 76% less chance of developing dementia. That's a really high number. So I really like her book, Smart Moves, Dr. Carla Hannaford. She's one who didn't, she says she didn't learn to read until she was 10. And she said, doesn't matter. She's a PhD. And back then it didn't matter. I think she's in her early 80s at this point. So just kind of getting that different perspective on childhood, and how much do we really have to be pushing these academics? How much time do we really have to spend on them? So I like those two. I really like Free to Learn by Dr. Peter Gray. So his premise is about a lot about the social aspect and the multi-age play and how important that is for kids, older and younger, to get together and have these free play experiences, really for their social skills, so they can learn how to negotiate and compromise and to put themselves in someone else's shoes, because they are intrinsically motivated to play and they want to keep playing. So they're trying to keep everyone happy, and that's a huge skill to learn. So I would say those are my top three favorites, but there's some really good ones too. Linda McGurk's got one called There's No Such Thing as Bad Weather. That one is all about kind of like the comfort crisis, like grit and resilience, and what does this season offer that other ones don't, and what can you find that's joy-filled now, even though it's cold or even though it's hot. So I really like that one too. It's been a lot of, I really like John Holt. I like John Taylor Gatto. There's a lot of people that have really influenced me over the years in terms of how we parent and how we live life.
I love that. So I would love you to tell everybody about your, I don't know if we'd really call it a program, but like your supportive things that you have, and that you have a book, another book coming out soon. I'd love to hear about all that.
We do have a lot. Don't things grow little by little, Cody? It's like the same for you.
I feel you. I'm like, and I have this, and I have this, and I'm like, wow, I'm just all over the place.
Yeah, like I used to have nothing, and now there's all these things. But we have a website. The website's been around for a long time. It's called 1000hoursoutside.com. Everything is 1000 hours outside, because I'm not very creative. But what you'll find there is a lot. I mean, we have quite a bit there, but we have a lot of free resources. So we have these tracker sheets. We're actually really keeping track of how much time we spend outside.
So
we have this pencil and paper tracker. There's like 16 different designs. They're all really cute. And it's a tool. It's a way to model to our kids balance. You can put it right in your refrigerator. We're aiming to get outside for 1,000 hours outside in a year. But if that's too much for your family, maybe you're going to do 500 hours. And each of those little spaces represents a half hour, I guess. That would make sense, right? So anyway, so you can kind of take it for what it is. And that's on there. And we have like a kickoff pack with hiking prompts and different booklets.
There's no rules to this.
There's no rules. No.
I had to laugh one time. I follow your group and somebody was like, we went to like an outdoor amusement park. Is that considered outdoor? And if that's your outdoors, that's congratulations. Yeah. You're outside, you know?
Yeah, like, totally.
We're arguing over whether or not that was considered outdoors.
Yes, there's a lot of arguments about it. So yeah, no rules. Make it worth the point. Think about the point. The point is to bring balance back to your life, back to childhood, between real life and virtual. So you make your own rules. So that's what's on our website. And then we have a podcast, the 1,000 Hours Outside podcast. You've been on it. And we're coming up on 200 episodes here pretty soon. So it's been such a treat, isn't it, Cody?
Yes.
To get to talk to these different authors and people that have influenced you. And so it's been a really big joy of mine. So we have that. We also have an app. So some people don't like the pencil and paper, so they use the app. It's the 1,000 Hours Outside app, and it's on iPhone and Android. It's like $3. So that's it. It's like a one-time purchase, and there's badges, and it's pretty fun. So we like to use that. And then, yeah, I have some books, and three of them are called 1,000 Hours Outside because I'm not very creative, and that's just the way it goes. But the new book has a new title. It's coming out in November, on November 14th. It's called Until the Streetlights Come On, and the premise is how a return to play brightens our today and prepares kids for an uncertain future. So this premise that like we can have a really good today. We can have a really fulfilling today. And that is really what is going to prepare our kids for tomorrow, not 9 hours of sitting. Like, we want our kids to have flexible brains, and we want them to be adaptable. We want them to be creative. We want them to have grit. We want them to be resilient. We want them to be able to take risks. We want them to have good social skills, because they're going to have a lot of coworkers probably. You know, the long gone are the days where you have a job for 30 years and you retire. They say kids coming out of college these days are going to have 4 jobs within their first decade of life. So that's a lot of coworkers. So they got to have good social skills. And all of these things that are so important for a rapidly changing world are learned when we play and when we interact and when we have a full life today. And so that's the premise of the book. You know, like everything else, there's all these, there's some pretty cool but pre-order bonuses and some different things, but that's coming out in November. It's a book I've wanted to write for a long time, so I'm super excited about it.
I'm excited about it. I've been watching, waiting for it to come out, and tried to schedule you to come on just at the right time where it's going to like hit at the same time. And I've been really excited for that, because I know that so many of my followers if they don't already follow you, they need to hear what you have to say, because it just goes so closely in my goal of raising the self-sufficient kids, because they're able to learn in such a different way when they're outside, they're playing, they're hands-on, they're learning all those cognitive skills that they don't learn in such sterile environments.
Yeah, it's really a great life. And I think my life is better too, Cody. It's such an interesting thing. Like, I remember thinking, I did have a thought when our kids were young of being jealous a little bit. Like, you know, because when we were kids, everyone just played in the neighborhoods and the moms stayed inside and they had things to do and they had time to get it done. And so I had periods of time in my life where I was like, oh, that might have been better. Like, I could have caught up on housework, or I could have made the meal. The kids are outside playing. But I do feel like my life is really full and enhanced because I go out too. And I'm trying to strike that balance too. And so we just have so many memories. On top of all the developmental benefits, we have so many memories of experiences that we've had as a family and also with friends that go along with us.
Yeah. It's amazing. And like, you know, my kids, they love it. And they know, even with like, when I get the itch to be outside, that we're all going to go and we're going to have a great time. And like, our favorite one is like berry picking. You know, I tell the kids, like, it's huckleberry time, and oh man, they're on it. They're out the door. They're gathering up buckets. Cause they love it. And they know that we're going to do more than, you know, we're listening to music in the car. We're getting like snacks we don't normally get. We're singing along to the radio, and it's just all part of that experience that they're going to remember that their whole lives.
Yeah. It's and isn't it cool too? Like you've got little ones and older ones. And so nature is one of those things that works. So if you have a large family and the you have a span of ages, or you're getting together with cousins and not everyone is the same age or that type of thing, nature still hits everyone right where they're at, and it works for all the different ages. And so that's one of the things I like about it too. I think parenting changes a lot. We are on our toes because we're from one stage to the next, kids are changing. But nature always works. It works for your baby and it works for your 16-year-old, and grandma can come along. So I love that part of it too.
That's awesome. So I like to ask everybody, what does keep growing mean to you?
Oh, that's such a good question. I love to grow, but I didn't know that I love to grow until I became a mom, actually. Isn't that interesting? I would feel like my whole life I actually only did what I was good at. So keep growing to me means to work at the things that you're not already good at, that you're not naturally good at. And that's what helps to expand your life and to expand your knowledge base. And I think it makes for a really full life too.
Oh, I love that. Well, thank you so much for coming on today. And everybody, make sure you go check Jenny out and what she has to offer because she's moving mountains.
Oh, Cody, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you to everyone who listened and made it to the end. That's amazing. It's an honor to be here.
Thank you. Did you enjoy today's episode? If so, please head over to your favorite podcast player and leave a comment and review. This helps me to know what you're enjoying and helps others find an episode that can help them. Thank you for joining me today at the Homestead Education, and I hope that I have given you something to think about this week. To help others find me, please comment and leave a review on your favorite podcast player. You can also follow me on Facebook at the Homestead Education and Instagram at Homestead underscore education. Do you have questions that you would like answered or just want to say hi? Please email me at hello@thehomesteadeducation.com. Until next time, keep growing!